Hello and welcome to an edition of Light Reading Extra. I'm Kelsey Zeiser. I'm a senior editor at Light Reading.
I'm Phil Harvey. I'm an editor at Light Reading.
Mike Dano, also an editor at Light Reading.
Ian Morris, another editor at Light Reading.
Teresa Kosova, also an editor at Light Reading.
Neat. We're all with Light Reading.
And we got loads of editors.
Our booking department is really lazy, isn't it? Aren't they?
Let me get all my friends on here. So Mike, Ian, and Teresa, you had the unique pleasure of going to Mobile World Congress last week in Barcelona. I think I pronounced it correctly.
Barcelona.
Mm-hmm. Barcelona. Barcelona. Yeah. Did you guys have some tapas?
Too much tapas. Have I told you about my tapas, Kelsey? Tapas are not, it's not real food. They're ingredients. You should take tapas and combine them into food. That's there. It's like the one stage before you get food. So you should take a tapas and then make food. Not a fan of tapas. I think we should continue now. Sorry.
This is it.
This is it. All right. This is the
podcast.
That's all anybody wanted to know is your thoughts on deconstructed.
Hey, Spain, entrees. We Americans have fixed your cuisine.
I would like to have a meal, not a bunch of ingredients. Like, put them together and then bring it to me.
Here's a pile of flour.
Exactly.
Everybody else can get the plates as they come out, but for Mike's table, they'll just give you all a bowl and a spoon, and you just kind of constantly add things to it.
Right. Just mix it together, at least.
I did think it was interesting, Mike. Basically.
You need to be the systems integrator, and you obviously didn't do a very good job of that. Which is why you should leave it to an expert and get a proper meal and take it rather than getting tapas.
Compatible is the question.
Weren't these games compatible? And that is, I think, the most epic transition I've ever heard. So I'm gonna turn the spotlight on you. What were some of the Open RAN updates? Yeah, at MWC. Did you have any Open RAN conversations?
I had lots of Open RAN conversations, but I didn't think Open RAN was actually a massive theme this year in the way that it was in previous years. I think it was kind of low-level chatter about it and people are doing things, but it was, I don't know, I kind of think the big themes were something else. I mean, AI was obviously a huge topic. Everybody's talking about AI, network APIs. They seem to be the kind of dominant subjects on the during the keynotes, and they were the kind of the big broad overarching topics, I think, rather than Open RAN. There was Open RAN stuff going on. There's actually more Open RAN stuff going on, even though it wasn't as much of a kind of keynote stage thing. I think that was my kind of feeling about it. I don't know if Mike, you agree, because you were talking to different people. I know you were meeting some of the US telco guys who have Open RAN things to say apparently these days, even though they're not with the Open RAN companies we thought they were going to be with, perhaps. But
I think that's exactly right. I felt the same thing. It was like Open RAN is maturing, and so now that there's less conversation about it, which feels like it's backward, but I think that's what was happening, is that there's more companies doing more things, but it's, you know, sort of more straightforward now. I mean, for sure. And AT&T was definitely on site, definitely talking about their big Open RAN thing a lot. But yeah, it's you know, it's not. The Open RAN that we talked about 4 or 5 years ago is not the Open RAN that we have today, you know. But I think you're right. The noise at the show was Open RAN was happening, but it wasn't the buzzword for sure.
Mm-hmm. Ian, you mentioned AI, and you had some insight. Posted an article about some news from Qualcomm and Intel. About moving AI out of the data center, or I think maybe that was Mike.
That was definitely Mike. No, I don't have any insights. No, I just hear AI, but I've no insights whatsoever.
Sorry, in my head, you guys are the same.
We are the same person.
We're all merging into one. Sorry, Mike. I gave your headline over to Ian there.
That's fine. We're the same person anyway.
Yeah, pretty much. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, why it's important to move AI out of the data center, why they're focused on that?
Yeah. And actually, Ian wrote a really good story about that today with the HPE stuff. So that was my big takeaway from this show, was just understanding AI. I mean, going to these trade shows, I find incredibly helpful because you really get a chance to talk to some of the smartest people in the industry about new stuff. And you can tell them, you know, explain it to me like I'm five because I don't understand AI. And just like, what is it? How does it work? You know, what are you doing? And so going to these shows is just immensely helpful because I don't know anything about AI. I'm not an AI researcher or anything. So it was great to go to the show and just have people explain what is even happening here. And so, yeah, that particular article is like, you know, basically AI is a big deal, right? But most of the AI stuff is happening in these big giant data centers that have lots of high performance computing. And then eventually the goal is to train, and they're training AI. They're making it smart in those big data centers. And then the goal is to make AI smart and then take it and put it inside of a smaller, cheaper data center that might be closer to the user because then the response time would be faster. So you train it in a big data center and then you put it out in the edge where it'll actually respond to questions quickly, which is interesting, right? Like goes back to the whole edge computing thing that we've been talking about for 7 years now.
And that's the phases of that is, how far away, so that's called the inference phase where it sort of gets deployed out to the edge and starts being used. Are we close to that or is this like a 5 years away kind of thing?
Yeah, good question. I think we're unsure. I think everybody's hoping it happens quickly, but you know, based on past, based on history, I'm not sure that it'll happen that quickly. We'll see. And it depends on what you're asking, right? Like if you just... Yeah. If you want to know, you know, something, if you need the response quickly, obviously you'd want it closer. But, you know, if you're just asking where, you know, how a legal question would work, then maybe your response would be slower.
I think the telcos are kind of sitting and waiting to see as well at the moment, the ones that I spoke to about this, because there's this NVIDIA pitch that you can buy GPUs and put them in your kind of edge facilities and do RAN acceleration and AI at the edge of the network. And that sounds appealing to some people, like SoftBank is, and the Japanese telcos seem to be kind of moving ahead with something. They're not very keen on talking about it in detail, not to me anyway, but they're moving ahead with something. But other people seem quite worried. I mean, GPUs are really expensive, you know, as everybody knows, and they've been in short supply. So I think there's a... people at telcos are sort of looking at their options, wondering if that's the best. I mean, Orange's newish CTO, who's called Bruno Zabib, and I haven't written this story yet, but I'm going to, but I did speak to him about this, and he went, at the moment, it's not a very good idea to go and buy GPUs for your edge data centers from NVIDIA, because I think there's other options coming down the pipeline that could be much more economical that aren't GPUs. There's startups doing interesting things. The hyperscalers have their own kind of options. So they could, you know, they've got this model where they kind of come and bring infrastructure and put it at the edge of the network for you. This kind of private cloud stack, but it comes from them. So it's sort of a bit, I think people are kind of waiting to see. And I think the danger then is, because the original edge computing, the telcos are nowhere really, are they? They've not really done anything in that space. I mean, people are talking about Amazon Outposts and whatever it might be. And there was this thing years ago when I first joined Light Reading about, is this the opportunity for the telcos to get back into the market and make use of their facilities in a way that the hyperscalers on their own can't? And it just seems to have not kind of come to anything. There's no signs of telcos making any money at all from edge computing so far. So if it does come with AI, then great, but they're not kind of moving quickly at the moment. They're kind of taking a wait and see approach, I think.
Yeah. And I thought it was interesting. Last thing, Kelsey, on that article you mentioned is that Intel was very clear that we can do AI on our chips, that you don't need NVIDIA. You can do it on Intel. Whether that's true or not, I think is an open question, but that was the thing from Intel, that you don't need these expensive NVIDIA chips.
Yeah. Really interesting to see where that'll be headed in the next year.
There's a chips bun fight basically going on in that area, I think. It's an AI chip bun fight going on in the edge. And it's whether if somebody come along, yeah, and show that you can do it economically, and this inferencing stage, which everybody's getting very excited about, doesn't need NVIDIA. And it doesn't even need NVIDIA. It doesn't need NVIDIA for the other stuff that you would do, the connecting clusters of chips. They've got this thing called, Phil, you know what it's called. What is it? InfiniBand, that's it, which is very proprietary. But there's an idea that you use Ethernet to connect stuff instead. And that's obviously much more standardized, and it's not one company that does it. And then maybe we can, because people are worried about the NVIDIA monopoly. I heard that word used by some telcos at the show. People are quite worried about it. And you should be, because it's worth what now? 10 trillion?
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Yeah. If NVIDIA wasn't necessary, why is their stock so high?
Well, that's the weird sort of thing in all this, is that it is a rapid consolidation of market power, because InfiniBand is owned by NVIDIA. And so everybody's worried that the processor and the method for distributing the data, most efficient at this point, is going to be owned by a single company. Obviously, like Ian was saying, and like Mike alluded to, you can't, you know, you can do all of this processing in all kinds of creative ways, but I think corporations are looking for like a standardized solution for it. And that does pull back in Ethernet's favor. You know, maybe the specification for Ethernet needs to, you know, maybe there's some latency issues or something that need to be fixed, but whatever it is, they can evolve Ethernet to probably compete with InfiniBand at some level. And I think that's what the broader industry, the broader networking industry would like to happen, so that it's not just one company calling all the shots.
Yeah, for sure. Switching gears a little, Teresa, this was your first time at MWC, and I'm so glad that you survived. I mean, you look intact.
I am, yes. Mostly intact, yes.
Okay. What were some of your thoughts on the show, just as it being your first time? And then I also saw you had some kind of sustainability updates as well.
Yeah, I think it's quite interesting, because I think, first of all, like, everyone said how massive the show was, and my imagination did not quite do it justice. But yeah, I think in terms of thoughts on the show, I think it's quite interesting, because, like, you know, I joined Light Reading about a year ago, and you kind of, especially if you're covering the industry in Europe, you kind of keep hearing on how, you know, the operators are kind of struggling to monetize 5G, etc., and how no one's necessarily doing that well. But then you come to the event, and there's kind of like this lavish affair with loads of, you know, this kind of just massive amount of huge booths and people announcing things and, you know, dinners, etc. And I think if you plonk someone in the middle of it who doesn't necessarily know anything about the industry, they probably think like, oh, it's doing quite well. And yeah, but so it's quite interesting, that kind of just clash in, in the narratives. I think Mike, you've written about this. But yeah, that's kind of, I think that was kind of the biggest thing that struck me the most.
The previous shows have all been about how great 5G was. And we kind of didn't get that this year necessarily. It was a little different than some of the Mobile World Congress shows before pandemic. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, you asked about the sustainability updates, I think, Kelsey. I think there was a press conference on Monday between Orange Business and Cisco, who announced a partnership to kind of focus more on kind of scope 3 emissions. And just making sure that kind of they can kind of provide their customers with a better idea of what the carbon footprint is of their solutions, as well as kind of reducing the carbon intensity of what they do for enterprises. So that was kind of one of the updates. And I think it kind of underscores a point about, from what I've heard at the show, about kind of or everyone involved in the industry starting to put a bigger importance on emissions and sustainability. I think during that press conference, for example, Elliot Munyerongpe, who's the CEO of Orange Business, kind of mentioned that even in RFP, the request for proposals, the kind of value put on sustainability has been going up. So I thought that was quite interesting.
Yeah, you know, that the sustainability part, you know, I didn't really focus on that, but it came up in some of my meetings, and especially with, you know, AT&T has that deal with Ericsson. And one of the things that was mentioned to me off the record by people who might know about it was that this AT&T switch to Ericsson was a big driver of it was less power, that the Ericsson equipment would use a lot less power than the current equipment. And that would reduce AT&T's, you know, power expenses. And so that was actually a big driver for the AT&T deal with Ericsson, which I thought was pretty interesting, right? Like it's a quieter thing, but definitely an important topic.
Yeah, it's a. This is coming at an interesting time too, because right when we're getting to deploying edge computing and talking up the future of edge computing and what do you call it? You know, the AI inference phase, getting closer to the edge of the network. Then we're also talking about sustainability as a virtue and trying to do all of this. So it's like we're expecting, you know, more compute cycles than ever before. And this isn't like the cloud where you can kind of completely outsource the IT part. You know, you have to own a bigger and bigger portion of it and be responsible for more of that infrastructure. And yet, you know, don't use that much power if you can get away with it, that kind of thing. So I feel like the stage is set for many, many years of tension between the proclamations around, you know, how sustainable a network or a piece of equipment is, yeah, and the practicality of just, you know, yeah, but we have to deliver these services with zero latency all the time, you know, so we have to leave it all on. So it's kind of a strange strange place to be, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And it goes back to our talk about AI, because if you do the high performance AI with the, you know, high performance GPUs, tons of power. You're just draining power, and they're actually struggling to allot enough state electrical capacity in a state like Virginia to power these AI data centers, because they draw so much electricity that there's some concerns that you just won't be able to power it because it requires so much power.
Yeah, and on the sustainability note, Nokia also announced recently that they have plans to push ahead their net zero global greenhouse gas emissions to 2040, and that's about 10 years ahead of their previous target and also 10 years ahead of the Paris Agreement. So, yeah, great point, Teresa. Definitely a lot going on in the sustainability realm of things.
How does a company that size achieve that other than just having all of its equipment decommissioned at large customers?
Yeah, that's the way they're doing it. That target came forward about 5 years after what happened at AT&T, I think.
Yeah, they just shut off a bunch of things. So it's like, yeah, that's easy. We're going to make our goal now. It's all just sitting in a warehouse.
Like that, we'll just turn everything off for a little bit.
All right, angry letters from Nokia coming my way. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, good luck with that, Phil. Yeah. So right ahead of a World Congress, there was that huge AT&T outage. Mike, you had some thoughts following up on that. Give us the tea.
It's, I mean, that was pretty interesting because, you know, normally, so outages are not totally uncommon, even here in the US. Like that happens, you know, cell sites go down, blah, blah, blah. But this one was a really quite a large outage that affected a lot of people. And I actually thought what was interesting is that AT&T was pretty forthright in addressing it, that they, yes, we had an outage and like, here's what we're going to do about it. Instead of, actually, the outage wasn't a real, you know, big deal, and it actually didn't affect that many customers. Like they didn't really talk around it. They really sort of addressed it more than I expected. But they're going to offer a $5 bill credit, and you know, that's about all they're probably going to do. They are talking to regulators. The New York Attorney General is investigating them. FCC may look into it. And they may suffer some customer losses as a result, But they really didn't go into the details of like what actually happened. Every conversation I had at Mobile World Congress was like, well, what do you think happened? Well, I think it was this. And there's lots of speculation about.
There was some really entertaining speculation ahead of Mobile World Congress. I think the most interesting one I saw was aliens.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, yeah. They said not cyber attacks. And so I'm happy to hear that.
You didn't say space attacks. So we haven't ruled it out.
Okay.
Yeah. Have not ruled out
aliens. Likelier than cyber attacks then at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing we've ruled out is cyber attacks. Everything else is still on the table.
Totally. That's what I want.
I'm a news professional, by the way. Yeah.
I'm glad we've moved into the conspiracy portion of this podcast. Mm-hmm.
Dovetailing on Mike's point, the part that was interesting about this outage was the stunning sort of scale and size of it, and also the length of time. I mean, even the FirstNet network, which is the first responder network in the U.S. that's kind of, I would say, ultra-regulated and is run by AT&T, that went down completely for about 3 hours and maybe longer in some portions, but it was starting to, they were starting to bounce back and get service again within 3 hours. And that was particularly, you know, it was a more or less a nationwide outage, you know, for that network. And that was stunning because, you know, AT&T correctly prioritized bringing that network around first before addressing, you know, issues with the broader network. So even the network that everyone agrees is the most important to keep up and running and should never go down, that one took an excessively long amount of time, you know, and covered, you know, the entire nation, or what we think of as like, you know, enough major cities that it was practically a nationwide outage. So it was a major event, and it's interesting. I guess I wonder out loud if we're really ever going to know what it was that caused it, because I think things like this kind of have a way of disappearing in government documents. You know,
yeah. I did talk to, you know, a number of people involved in that, and one of the messages was it wasn't the new stuff. You know, they're moving their core into Microsoft, or they're, you know, they've got this big deal with Microsoft about moving the core into an Azure environment. And everyone I spoke with was very clear that it wasn't that, but you know, it was not clear what it was.
Yeah.
Well, probably aliens.
Yeah.
It has to be aliens then. Yeah. It's not Microsoft and it's not cyber attacks then.
Yeah.
We're narrowing it down.
Well, I'm very curious find out if it had to do with, you know, an equipment vendor updating code on their machines, because that would explain the widespread nature of it, or if it had something to do with a software application in the core of the network and how, you know, maybe that was misapplied, because, you know, AT&T was is one of the largest carriers that has virtualized a lot of its infrastructure, so there could be a possibility there, but. Yeah, it's almost exhausting trying to think about all the things that could lead to some, you know, such a huge network going down simultaneously in so many locations. So it is intriguing, and you know, if we find out, of course, we'll pass it along.
Yeah, maybe somebody spilled some coffee on a server or something. I mean,
yeah, maybe it's that big room with all the screens. They just guys unplugged one of the computers and then the whole network went down. That's how I always pictured it happening. But yeah. They tell me that's technically impossible, but we'll see.
Don't touch this button. But
how was connectivity at Mobile World Congress? Now that we're on the subject, were the networks running well, and was everyone, you know, able to get Wi-Fi in all the various places? Because like Teresa said, even if you know you're going into a big sprawling trade show, that one seems bigger and more sprawling when you get there in terms of the just sheer size of it. And when you're walking the hallway just continues to move off into the distance, you know, you never actually reach the horizon.
Yeah, I thought the Wi-Fi was good this year, actually, but it shouldn't be Wi-Fi, really, should it? It's sort of out of place at a cellular show. That's the yeah. It's an imposter. No one wants to call it that. But why are you using Wi-Fi? You should be using cellular. But yeah, even Ericsson's stand had like Wi-Fi hotspots set up and with specific passwords. But yeah, very suspicious. It's not good enough, this 5G.
No, not indoors. That's what's interesting is like there's private wireless networks as like one of the booming businesses in telecom right now. You know, it's the one that's gonna make a load of money for 5G operators installing private networks for enterprises of various sizes, but hasn't quite reached Mobile World Congress yet, or any trade show, I should say, because you know every trade show I go to, they give you a Wi-Fi password. It's Wi-Fi is still the king of connectivity as far as that goes. Glad to hear there weren't any troubles. Were there transit issues this year?
No, everything was smooth logistically, I think.
And the weather, I heard better. You actually got your Metro passes at the airport this year.
You can.
Which is nice, because last year, Mike and I are, I guess, not great with public transit. And we bought the wrong ticket trying to get to the FIRA to get the pass for the week, and so that was entertaining.
And you just ended up at the beach and decided that's good enough, right?
Yeah, we actually ended up in Germany, and we're like, you know what, we'll just report from here.
That's a long train,
close enough.
Maybe we should to wrap up. You want to go around? Let's go around the horn and give one highlight and one low light from the show. Maybe leading with the low light first. You don't have to have one of each, but just or your main takeaway. And I'll leave it open. I don't want to call out anybody. Just first one to speak up.
My highlight was Mike's desperation story.
Oh yeah,
which I thought summed the whole thing up really well.
Which to summarize for the people in our audience that don't read our site, God damn you all.
We're gonna get fined for that. Phil's language.
Yes.
I don't like hearing I only listen to the podcast. I mean, I do like it. Don't go away. Please love me, but still.
Phil just alienating our audience in here. It's fine.
Everyone left yet? Okay. Mike, what was the sort of the short version of what you wrote?
Yeah, it was a picture of Linda Hamilton from the Terminator 2 movie. And in that movie, she knows what the future is. She knows that the robots are going to attack. And so she's left as like, how do you prepare for the apocalypse? So she's loading her rifle. Yeah. And doing pull-ups, basically.
Pull-ups.
And so like, that was it. It's like, that's the industry. They know, you know, there's no big revenues on the horizon. AI is coming. It's like batten down the hatches, get in that bunker.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love that movie so much. Yeah, totally got my attention.
No fate.
I thought the social stuff was good. I mean, seeing these guys, obviously, apart from Shane Kelty couldn't make it, but and the operator dudes are always quite nice in the evening. They have their sort of, you know, you must come along to our dinner on Monday with Orange's board, and you sort of get good access to, as Mike was saying, you get good access to top people. Whether it's on the record or off the record, that's all really good. My low light was probably just some of the themes themselves that we've mentioned even, but ones we haven't talked about in detail. I mean, AI, I find it a bit depressing that there's a big focus on generative AI and everybody's very enthusiastic about it when it's not really a telco thing. You know, it's something, you could be at a banking event and they're talking about generative AI, and it just seems a bit weird for that to be a huge theme, because let's be honest, I think the application at the moment is probably customer services and not much else. I know they talk about it in other areas. And then I think the whole network APIs thing, I mean, to Mike's point about that, really is desperation to me. That is the desperation thing going on. They've not been able to monetize their networks very well in just by rolling out these latest generations of technology. And I sort of see network APIs as a bit of a kind of desperate attempt to do that. And if I'm going to try and be positive about it, there is a lot going on. There's a lot of people behind it. You know, there does seem to be some alignment on the on this Kamara initiative to make sure that the APIs are standardized across the industry. You know, you've got a lot of platforms in the mix, but really, and the telcos themselves will tell you this off the record, whether anybody's going to see a huge amount of value in these APIs, you know, enough for developers to actually pay for them, or someone sitting at a computer to pay for 2 hours of Fortnite on a low latency connection. I just don't go along with it. And there were some funny numbers coming out from McKinsey, which I wrote about in a story at the start of the week, that they actually sound bigger than they are, though. Even those numbers, it's 300 billion, I think, is the figure they came out with, that network APIs could be worth by 2030. But if you look at Omdia's figures, where service revenues, fixed and mobile, each year are about a trillion and going up with inflation, that 300 billion in the context of that over a 6-7 year period is only about 4%, you know, 4 percentage points kind of growth, you know. So it sounds better than it is. You throw these funny numbers out and everybody gets kind of carried away, but anyway, that was my low light, I think. Network APIs, if there's network APIs next year, I'm not going again.
You're over it.
Have your network talk to their network and you don't have to go.
There you go.
Teresa, what about you? Highlights, low lights?
Yeah, I don't know if I have a low light. I think my highlight, and that's probably just echoing what Mike and Ian have both said, but I think you kind of, because of how many people you talk to and how condensed the whole thing is, I feel like you just kind of end up absorbing in 3 days an amount of insight that you otherwise wouldn't in, you know, several weeks. So I thought that was really cool by going to MWC. Not to sound like I'm promoting the event.
That's the reason events like that are, it's the good and the bad about an event like that, is the good news is everyone's there. The bad news is everyone's there. So,
yeah. Okay. So as we wrap up, did anyone brave the press room? Just curious.
Oh yeah. I was going to mention, one of my highlights was just like, it seemed like, you know, Mobile World Congress was back after the pandemic. I think, attendance was quite high. I don't know if they released, official numbers, but it really felt like pre-pandemic traffic and stuff. And then they also moved the press room out in, so they used to put it in this like sweaty, hot, tiny little set of rooms that was really quite miserable. And they moved it out of there into this like big hallway, and it was way better. The press room was way better this year.
Yeah, nice. The old press room used to smell like a sock.
Oh,
it was,
man.
Gross.
Yeah, it was rough. It was awesome. I went last year and I had to talk to someone. I'm like, I legit don't think there's like airflow to this room.
No.
Turn something on.
It was way better this year.
The attendance figure, just on Mike's point, they did come out with one. 101,000 is what they said.
Wow.
Which, interestingly, is 6,000 more than they were expecting. Oh. And it's only about 8,000 below its very peak in 2018, 2019. And the thing I don't get is, who are all these people? You know, I mean, nobody works in telecom anymore. They all get laid off every year. So I don't understand why. The only thing that grows in telecom is GSMA attendance to MWC. That's the only site. That's the only growth opportunity there is.
Everyone who got laid off has come back to see if there are any jobs.
Yeah. A giant job fair.
Well, I also think there's probably a good bit of the cloud computing and enterprise networking industry that's arriving at a show like that, because telcos are going to end up being either their largest customers or their largest channel to sell other things. So yeah, maybe that's it,
I think.
But yeah, good point. They're laying off about that many people in the US every year, and from the top four telcos. So it is kind of defies expectations that the show attendance keeps going up.
Well, right. I love that we ended it on a burn, Ian. Thanks for that. Thanks, Mike, Phil, Teresa, and Ian, and appreciate all your hard work at MWC.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.